Power buries our dreams under a pile of lies. Power hates to see hope shining in our eyes. When power reigns and plays its games, power kills the strongest wills. But someone has to cross the River Jordan. Someone has to cross the River Jordan. Someone has to find a way to save the day. Let this be the hour to speak truth to power.
Hi everybody, I'm Charles Ortlieb. Welcome to my weekly show, Truth to Power. That was Chris Davidson singing Truth to Power, a song I wrote with him. Chris is a British singer-songwriter who was discovered by Freddie Mercury's manager. You can find that song and all the other songs I've written with him on iTunes, Spotify, and all the streaming services. Truth to Power is also the title of my book, which is a history of the AIDS and chronic fatigue syndrome epidemic, and my newspaper, New York Native, which I ran from 1980 until we went out of business in 1997. On my show, I explore a lot of the unresolved stories we covered about the politics and science of AIDS and chronic fatigue syndrome. And if you think these issues only affect a tiny minority of people, please stay tuned because you have some surprises coming. On the show today, I'm going to discuss a surprising finding in chronic fatigue syndrome patients and how it may be connected to a disaster that is headed for Europe. Listen to this news clip from a Korean television station.
Moving on, Korea's agriculture ministry plans to ban pork imports from Poland after reports of an African swine fever case in the country. Polish authorities earlier this week confirmed that the highly contagious virus was detected in a dead wild boar near the Belarusian border. Korea's ban on pork products follows a similar move in Russia. The African swine fever virus has a very high mortality rate and has been confirmed in several Eastern European countries recently. That said, it doesn't affect humans.
That news report was from 2014. Since then, African swine fever has spread to Lithuania, Romania, Estonia, Latvia, and as far west as the Czech Republic. It will be a miracle if African swine fever does not spread to the rest of Europe. Here is a member of the European Parliament expressing his fear that African swine fever will spread to Great Britain.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you to the Commission, actually, for giving a good briefing on this disease, African swine fever, for which they say there is no vaccine. So it's obviously very, very serious. And I particularly like to thank my colleague here from Lithuania, where he has had first-hand experience of the disease, and it points out a scenario that could well happen. Now, he mentioned that when this huge pig unit near him in Lithuania closed down, there was a lot of unemployment. And if I was a pigman working on one of those units that had closed down, my instinct would be to look for another job as a pigman somewhere else, and I might well go to the United Kingdom. And it's quite conceivable that this disease can be carried on clothing. So we could get this disease by default into the United Kingdom through somebody who's worked on a pig farm in Lithuania or Poland, then working on one in the United Kingdom. And there's nothing we can really do to stop that. So I would urge, please, the member states concerned to let their agricultural workforces know that if they are going to move to a farm elsewhere, that they could be a biosecurity risk and to take the appropriate measures. Because if they bring African swine fever into Britain, the pig farm they work on will close down. So it's very much in their interests to make sure that they're squeaky clean. What I can also do is to alert our Minister of Agriculture to the fact that tourists going to these beautiful forests in Eastern Europe could come into contact with where wild boar have been and bring the disease back unwittingly. So we do have a serious problem here, and my sincere commiserations to the MEP from Lithuania. This is very, very serious. Thank you.
Here is a warning to Ukrainians about African swine fever from the Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations.
African swine fever is a highly contagious viral infection of pigs, with mortalities close to 100%. It has become a growing concern in many oblasts in Ukraine, and we must each do our part to quickly address the threat before it's too late. Potential economic losses due to an ASF outbreak on a 1,000-head pig farm were estimated to be 3 to 4 million Ukrainian hryvnia, which is almost double the value of lost farm animals. But how is ASF spread? Pigs can be infected by contact with infected pigs, their feces, or their body fluids, when eating infectious meat or meat products, and with anything contaminated with the virus, including people, their clothing, and other equipment. What can be done to prevent it? Effective measures include marking controlled entry-exit points within pigsties, washing and disinfecting boots regularly, and having farm visitors change their boots and clothes. Don't feed pigs with pig remains. Boil swill for 30 minutes and allow it to cool before feeding. During an outbreak, no movement of pigs or any products of pig origin should be allowed from infected farms. Carcasses, animal products, and bedding must be burnt or buried deeply on site, and all infected and in contact pigs must be humanely slaughtered. Also, vehicles, clothes, and equipment should be disinfected upon entering and leaving farms. It is crucial to report ASF immediately. Research has shown that timely reporting and response dramatically reduces the risk of further spread. Failure to report comes with administrative and criminal sanctions. Please notify your local veterinary office immediately if you have any suspicion of ASF, and they will provide you with the necessary assistance. Only together can we stop it.
The first time I ever heard about African swine fever was back in 1983 when I got a call from John Berendt, who was an editor in New York. He knew my newspaper was trying to cover the AIDS epidemic from every angle, and he told me about a fascinating article in New Scientist by Omar Satour. The April 28, 1983 article was titled AIDS Hunt Homes In On Haitian Pigs. Satour wrote, "Acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, otherwise known as AIDS, the disease that is mystifying doctors and spreading rapidly among American gays, may be caused by a new strain of African swine fever virus that is infecting pigs in Haiti. Dr. Jane Tees of the Harvard School of Public Health in Boston, Massachusetts, believes that AIDS could have originated with just one Haitian homosexual eating infected pork. He could have passed the disease on to American gays touring Haiti. AIDS was first recognized in 1978. It suppresses the immune system so that infected people are prone to almost any infection that happens to come their way. In addition, AIDS victims often develop a rare type of cancer known as Kaposi sarcoma. The severity and virulence of the disease is causing great concern in the United States. The American Watchdog for Communicable Diseases, the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, Georgia, has received 1,339 notifications of the disease up to mid-April, of which 505 have died. They have set up an AIDS task force, which has been searching for the bug that causes the disease. They suspect a virus. In a letter to The Lancet, T suggests that the AIDS virus may be a modified strain of the virus that causes African swine fever. Tees told New Scientist, quote, "I believe the case is even stronger than my paper suggests." There are many similarities between AIDS and African swine fever. The first cases of AIDS were reported in 1978. They were closely followed by the confirmation of ASFE in Haitian pigs in 1979. Both caused fever and loss of appetite. ASFE also modifies the immune system in a similar way to AIDS. AIDS patients have swollen lymph nodes. These are the sites of antibody production and of the removal of invading organisms. In pigs with ASFE, cells of the lymphatic system multiply abnormally rapidly. This also resembles what happens in AIDS. Tees suggests that infection of human immune cells with a variant of ASFE could explain the immune deficiency seen in AIDS patients. ASFE can be spread through contact with feces, blood, and urine. The virus was first discovered to infect 2 species of tick and 3 species of wild swine in Africa. By 1909, it had spread to domestic African pigs. It has since migrated to Europe, Latin America, and the Caribbean, leaving a trail of slightly different strains in its wake. The only way to combat the disease is to kill all the pigs, as was done in Cuba when the disease was confirmed in 1976. The American government has recently announced that it is to spend some $18 million to wipe out the pig population of Haiti in an effort to control the virus. Teves believes that AIDS could have started with a Haitian eating infected pork. The person would have been a homosexual with a stomach ulcer or abscess through which the virus could have penetrated his circulation. He could then have transmitted the disease through sexual contact with American gays holidaying in Haiti. Since the virus can spread through blood transfusions, that could account for the 25% of AIDS victims who are not gay. Teves is planning to test her suspicions by infecting pig blood with blood from AIDS patients and comparing it with pig blood infected with ASFE and looking for similarities. I sent a reporter to Boston to interview Teves, and we put the interview on the cover. We thought it was the most compelling idea about the nature of the AIDS epidemic at the time, and we documented her attempts to get her idea tested in the face of great hostility from what was quickly becoming the AIDS establishment. I'm going to discuss her struggle on a future show, and I hope to interview her. But if you want to know more about what happened back then, I suggest you pick up a copy of my book, Truth to Power, which is available at Amazon in all countries. Suffice it to say that neither the CDC nor the Department of Agriculture were pleased with her idea and her desire to test it. Talking about AIDS in the context of an infected food supply made both organizations go jiggy, to put it mildly. Back in the 80s, I dealt with some interesting characters in the Department of Agriculture, and the idea that a supposedly gay disease like AIDS has anything to do with a virus that they researched in pigs was constantly dismissed out of hand or made to sound like it was a gay idea. Ironically, during that same period, a textbook on African swine fever came out by a researcher named Yekiel Becker that said that African swine fever was, quote, the acquired immunodeficiency disease of pigs. But as far as AIDS causation was concerned, the HIV fix was already in, and that was that. If you want to know more about how that transpired, listen to the show I did last week in which I explained how the HIV theory was a kind of Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme that continues to this very day. Back in the 80s, I couldn't point to research that suggests that people could become infected with African swine fever because there wasn't any. But here's some breaking news. There is now. Well, actually, it's not brand new, but it has received exactly zero coverage from the mainstream media. I started a website called African Swine Fever University to cover research that in any way suggests that people can become infected with African swine fever. The URL is humanasfe.blogspot.com. So here goes. In December 2009, a paper was published in the Journal of Virology. The lead author was a Dr. Virgin from the Department of Pathology, Immunology, and Molecular Microbiology at the Washington University School of Medicine. The title of the paper was Detection of Novel Sequences Related to African Swine Fever Virus in Human Sewage and Serum. Let me say that again. The Detection of Sequences Related to African Swine Fever Virus in Human Sewage and Serum. Okay. So was that reported on the front page of the New York Times? No. Should it have been reported on the front page of the New York Times? Yes. So here's the deal. African swine fever was thought to be the only virus in a family called Asfaviridae. That's Asfaviridae. But this paper threw that assumption out the window. Here's the abstract. The family Asfaviridae contains only a single virus species, African swine fever virus, ASFE. ASFE is a viral agent with significant economic impact due to its devastating effects on populations of domesticated pigs during outbreaks, but has not been reported to infect humans. We report here the discovery of novel viral sequences in human serum and sewage, which are clearly related to the Asfar virus family, but highly divergent from African swine fever virus.
Detection of these sequences suggests that greater genetic diversity may exist among ASFAR viruses than previously thought and raises the possibility that human infection by ASFAR viruses may occur. If the CDC had known that, they might have been more cooperative with Jane Tees when she suggested that a human infection of African swine fever was driving the AIDS epidemic. Again, I urge you to listen to last week's show to get a sense of how totalitarianism has taken over the helm of AIDS research. In the discussion part of the paper, the authors wrote, quote, although ASFE is not known to infect humans even where the virus is endemic, identification of ASFE-like sequences in serum from multiple human patients suggests that human infection may occur. I repeat, that human infection may occur. Further studies are underway to prospectively screen patient samples by PCR for the presence of ASFE-like sequences using primers to the sequences reported here in order to assess prevalence and geographic distribution. These studies, in combination with serological analyses, will be required to determine whether the ASFE-like virus is, in fact, a human virus and whether it is associated with human disease. The finding of ASFE-like sequences in sewage from Spain indicates that they are not geographically limited to the Middle East, where the human patient specimens were obtained, although it is unclear whether the source of the ASFE-like sequences in sewage is human or animal. This also suggests that the virus may be fecally shedded and that screening of stools in addition to serum may be informative. Identification of additional samples containing ASFE-like sequences will be important for the key future goals of obtaining more sequence from the viral genome, determining if the virus can be cultured, and establishing a small animal model of infection. Folks, this is pretty explosive stuff when you consider the fact that in the coming months we may hear that African swine fever virus is all over Europe. And the problem is that even though they will try to control it by killing the domestic pigs who become infected, the carriers of the disease tend to be wild boars who are difficult to control. And there's one more complicating issue. This is a virus that gets into ticks. I'm sure that fact will make any of you out there who know anything about Lyme disease sit up and take notice. Yes, once it gets into ticks, the problem becomes a Stephen King novel. And then, on top of that, the virus that is being transmitted to and from pigs and ticks might also be a human infection that is being transmitted to and from humans, pigs, and ticks. So theoretically, people could get African swine fever either from pigs or ticks, or as things progress, from each other. Now you can appreciate why the CDC and the United States Department of Agriculture preferred the gay HIV theory, or as I call it, the HIV Ponzi scheme, rather than to consider that AIDS not only was coming from pigs, but was causing a far bigger epidemic in people than what was being paradigmed as AIDS. Now, the next WTF paper about African swine fever and humans is titled Detection of African Swine Fever Virus-like Sequences in Ponds in the Mississippi Delta Through Metagenomic Sequencing. That's Detection of African Swine Fever Virus Sequences in Ponds in the Mississippi Delta Through Metagenomic Sequencing. The lead author was, and I'm going to spell it, Q-I-A-N-G-H-E. That's capital Q-I-A-N-G, capital H-E. The publication was the June 2013 issue of Virus Genes. Here's the abstract. Metagenomic characterization of water virome was performed in four Mississippi catfish ponds. Although differing considerably from African swine fever virus, ASFE, 48 of 446,000 sequences from 12 samples were similar enough to indicate that they represent new members in the family Aspergillus. At present, ASFE is the only member of Aspergillus, and this study presents the first indication of a similar virus in North America. At this point, there is no indication that the identified virus or viruses pose a threat to human or animal health, and further study is needed to characterize their potential risk to both public health and agricultural development. And here is what the authors wrote in their conclusion. African swine fever virus is the only known virus in the family of Aspergillus. ASFE is the causative agent of hemorrhagic viremia in domestic swine. This pathogen is endemic to Africa and naturally occurs in wild swine species without causing disease. The natural life cycle involves transmission by soft ticks. It is the only known DNA virus that is transmitted by arthropods. Outside of Africa, outbreaks of ASFE have been documented in Europe and Central South America. These outbreaks were linked to the movement of domestic pigs. After the outbreaks in America, ASFE was eliminated by depopulation. Our metagenomic results suggest that there is more than one member of the family Aspergillus, and that at least one member of Aspergillus is present in North America. To better characterize this new virus, PCRs were performed, which confirmed the positive amplification of ASFE-like capsid and helicase gene sequences. However, PCR amplification targeting the regions between these two genes, which neighbor each other in ASFE, was not successful. Thus, the gene order in this potential new virus is not necessarily the same as that in ASFE. Interestingly, a recent study has also identified ASFE-like sequences from human serum and sewage. That was the previous study I mentioned. These reported sequences shared sequence identities from 27 to 64% with ASFE. Comparison of the 48 sequences from our study with those recovered by that study indicate that the homologous regions of these sequences are located in different regions of the ASFE genome, and further study is required to understand the natural host potential and pathogenicity of this virus. Another study reported ASFE-like sequences were identified in human sera from patients with dengue-like symptoms but testing negative for dengue virus. In addition, metagenomic data demonstrated that ASFE-like sequences were present in marine environments. These studies support our findings in this study that it is more likely that new members are present in the family Aspergillus. Mississippi has diverse vertebrate wildlife, including a large population of feral pigs. But since emerging ASFE is a tick-borne virus, an invertebrate host is also likely. At this point, there is no indication that the identified virus poses a threat to human or animal health. Okay, there is more than one reason this one should have been on the front page of the Times, because for starters, what in God's name is African swine fever doing in the United States of America in any form? But that gets trumped by the possibility that it is now a human infection in the United States. As you will hear on a future show, the career of Jane Teese was basically destroyed because she dared to research the possibility that African swine fever had made its way into humans. I mean, a disease passing from pigs to humans? What a crazy idea. There are a few other things I could bring up, but I'll end this section by talking about one of the wildest patents I have ever seen, and I still can't believe it actually exists. The patent was filed by Dr. Matthias Rath on July 5, 2006, and is entitled Preventive and Therapeutic Use of Polypeptides from African Swine Fever Virus as Vaccines. Dr. Rath was born in Stuttgart, Germany in 1955. After graduating from medical school, he worked as a physician and researcher at the University Clinic of Hamburg, Germany, and the German Heart Center in Berlin. His research focused on the causes of arteriosclerosis and cardiovascular disease. In 1987, Dr. Rath discovered the connection between vitamin C deficiency and a new risk factor for heart disease. After publication of these research findings in the American Heart Association Journal, Dr. Rath accepted an invitation to join two-time Nobel laureate Linus Pauling. In 1990, he went to the United States to become the first director of cardiovascular research at the Linus Pauling Institute in Palo Alto, California. Dr. Rath worked together with the late Nobel laureate in various areas of nutritional research. The two scientists became close personal friends who shared common humanistic values, including their determination for peace and justice. In 1994, shortly before his death, Linus Pauling stated, "There is no doubt in my mind that I was thinking about Dr. Rath as my successor." Here is the description of what was patented. Quote, "The present invention generally relates to the use of selected polypeptides from African swine fever virus for the prevention and therapy of African swine infections as well as other infections, including immune deficiencies in mammals and humans. African swine fever is an endemic disease in sub-Saharan Africa and many other parts of the developing world. It is caused by the African swine virus that primarily replicates in macrophages and monocytes, leading to the impairment of the structure and function of the immune system of the infected organisms. Until now, the African swine epidemic continues to spread despite all efforts to contain it. Thus, there is an objective need for effective, safe, and affordable preventive and therapeutic approaches, in particular for effective vaccines to control and eventually eradicate this disease. Since the characteristic feature of the African swine virus is to impair the immune system and to cause immune deficiencies in its host, the development of vaccines and other therapeutic approaches against the African swine virus has implications for other immune deficiencies or diseases. Several other diseases are also known to cause immunodeficiency-like syndromes in humans, including cytomegalovirus, Epstein-Barr virus, and others. Moreover, a series of cases of so-called idiopathic immunodeficiencies have been documented that display lymphopenia with opportunistic infections but show no evidence of HIV infection. Since antibodies for the African swine fever virus have been detected in humans, the possibility of human infection with African swine virus exists and may thus far have escaped any systematic screening. Thus, any preventive and therapeutic approach to African swine fever can have far-reaching implications to control immune deficiency conditions in humans. The current invention also describes the application of the current invention for the diagnosis and treatment of immune deficiency conditions in mammals. The following are the characteristics of the African swine virus. 1. It targets the immune system of the host. 2. It has the following morphological features. In particular, it structurally and functionally impairs the lymph nodes and other integral parts of the immune system. 3. Its hematological changes includes a significant decrease of CD4 and T-cell counts. 4. Both viruses share similar clinical findings, namely lymph node swelling, increased susceptibility to infections, and others. 5. It has both an acute and chronic form of infectious states. 6. It is known to display a high frequency of alteration of their genetic sequence in order to escape the host defense system. 7. It is endemic in sub-Saharan Africa and few other regions. While the African swine virus has been primarily detected in pigs and certain other animals, antibodies against African swine fever virus have also been found in humans. The fact that there was no description of any finding of the African swine fever virus in humans may thus be attributable to oversight or a lack of understanding for the significance of African swine fever virus for the pathogenicity of immune deficiencies in humans. Thus, the inventions described in this patent application can have far-reaching implications not only for the control of African swine fever, but also for the control of other immunodeficiency diseases. Okay, so anyone in Europe, Russia, or China who is concerned about African swine fever's potential impact on human health want to study Dr. Rath's invention. On July 11, 2013, a publication called Pig Progress ran this item about one person who is concerned. Quote, "The African swine virus, ASFV, may, in the future, become dangerous for humans, according to the head of the Russian Epidemiology Service, Chief State Sanitary Dr. Gennady Onishenko, at the press conference in St. Petersburg. According to him, almost all viruses, from time to time, go through mutation processes, which can give them some additional functions." Quote, "If we take into account the fact that pig physiology is very close to human physiology and they suffer illness in almost the same way as we do, there is reason to believe that in the next round of mutation, the virus can become dangerous to humans, he said. That reporting was done by Vladislav Voronitkov.
As Europe prepares to deal with African swine fever and the possibility that it will become endemic in domestic pigs, wild boars, and maybe even humans, scientists should take a close look at Sardinia.
And they'd better have an open mind and be ready to have their belief that ASFE cannot infect humans challenged.
African swine fever virus has been endemic in Sardinia since 1978. The European Union has been very nervous about the African swine fever situation in Sardinia. According to a Pig Progress story in 2012, the island of Sardinia is the only place in the European Union where African swine fever virus is still present. In the remainder of the European Union, the disease has no longer been present since 1960. That year, ASF was confirmed in 7 of the 8 provinces. Italy has therefore asked the European Commission to help in the preparation of a modified and improved monitoring and management program for the disease. The European Commission said, if we cannot liberate Sardinia from this pig disease, it will have a negative effect on the rest of the EU, both veterinary and economically. This is why we have made $1.6 million available. Two other things are a big problem in Sardinia: Kaposi sarcoma and the virus that supposedly causes it, HHV8. Now here is the skinny on Kaposi sarcoma, or KS, from Wikipedia. Kaposi sarcoma, KS, is a systemic disease that can present with cutaneous lesions with or without internal involvement. 4 subtypes have been described: classic KS affecting middle-aged men of Mediterranean descent, African endemic KS, KS in iatrogenically immunosuppressed patients, and AIDS-related KS. The erythematous to violaceous cutaneous lesions seen in KS have several morphologies: macular, patch, plaque, nodular, and exophytic. The cutaneous lesions can be solitary, localized, or disseminated. KS can involve the oral cavity, lymph nodes, and viscera. Classic KS tends to be indolent, presenting with erythematous or violaceous patches on the lower extremities. African endemic KS and AIDS-related KS tend to be more aggressive. The AIDS-related KS lesions often rapidly progress to plaques and nodules affecting the upper trunk, face, and oral mucosa. The diagnosis can be made with a tissue biopsy, and if clinically indicated, internal imaging should be done. It was originally described by Moritz Kaposi, a Hungarian dermatologist practicing at the University of Vienna in 1872. It became more widely known as one of the AIDS-defining illnesses in the 1980s. I repeat, it became more widely known as one of the AIDS-defining illnesses in the 1980s.
All these diseases, the one that's generated the most concern and even fear in the gay community is called Kaposi sarcoma. Kaposi sarcoma used to be known as simply a relatively rare form of cancer, but in the last few months, it's become an epidemic. In just 4 years, there have been 500 cases of this almost unheard-of form of viral cancer. Half of those victims have died, making Kaposi a greater killer than Legionnaire's disease and toxic shock syndrome put together. And in 75% of the cases, the victims were gay men. Dr. Paul Volberding, a cancer researcher at the University of California at San Francisco, says there's no good explanation for the sudden surge in Kaposi or for why it strikes gays.
Our best guess is that it's somehow related to the gay lifestyle, that whether it's drug use, whether it's sexual activity, we're not completely sure at this time. One thing that we've seen is that the patients with this disease tend to have more frequent sexual contacts than people that don't get this disease. So at this time, we think that it is sexually transmitted.
So far, research shows that people get Kaposi not because it is particularly virulent or infectious, but because their immune system, the body's defense against all diseases, has been seriously weakened by drugs, poor nutrition, or lack of sleep. It is a syndrome researchers call acquired immune deficiency. That immune deficiency has made early attempts to fight this disease frustrating, because chemotherapy, the treatment normally used against cancer, only seems to make matters worse.
That was from a 1982 KQED report by Bill Skane.
As you can tell from Volberding's comments and from things I've pointed out on my previous three shows, AIDS was enmeshed in gay sex-obsessed ideation, epidemiology, and public health stereotypes from the get-go. And that has complicated getting to the bottom of chronic fatigue syndrome, because every time any research starts to show the connection of the chronic fatigue syndrome epidemic to AIDS, the wall of gay sex-obsessed ideation, epidemiology, and public health stereotypes goes up between them. And that is to nobody's benefit in the long run. A correction in the AIDS paradigm could come when scientists look closely at the fact that Sardinia seems to be a place where African swine fever, the hemorrhagic disease of pigs, is endemic. Sardinia is also a hot spot for Kaposi sarcoma, which has also been described as a hemorrhagic sarcoma. It seems only reasonable to wonder if there is a link between the high incidence of African swine fever in Sardinia and the high incidence of Kaposi sarcoma in people. And that brings us to the subject of HHV8, otherwise known as the Kaposi sarcoma virus. A little background on HHV8 from Wikipedia. HHV8 was first found by Yuan Chang and Patrick S. Moore, a wife and husband team at Columbia University, in 1994 by isolating DNA fragments of a herpes virus from a Kaposi sarcoma tumor in an AIDS patient. As early as 1984, scientists had reported seeing herpes virus-like structures in KS tumors by electron microscopy. Scientists by then had been searching for the agents causing Kaposi sarcoma, and over 20 agents had been described as the possible cause of KS, including cytomegalovirus and HIV itself. Of course, scientists wondered whether Sardinia's high incidence of Kaposi sarcoma correlated with a high incidence of HHV8, and the answer was in the affirmative. An important article on this appeared in the June 1998 issue of the Journal of Infectious Diseases. The title was High Prevalence of Antibodies to Human Herpes Virus 8 in Relatives of Patients with Classic Kaposi Sarcoma from Sardinia. I quote here from the conclusions. The research reported on a survey for antibodies to a recombinant small viral capsid antigen of human herpes virus type 8 that was conducted in Sardinia, one of the world's highest incidence areas for classic Kaposi sarcoma. Prevalence of antibodies to HHV8's viral capsid antigen was greatest in patients with Kaposi sarcoma, it was 95%, followed by family members, it was 39%. Within families, prevalence of antibodies was about equal among spouses, children, and siblings of KS patients, a finding that raises the possibilities of intrafamilial person-to-person or vertical transmission. Antibodies were detected 2 to 3 times more frequently in males than in females. The data showed that prevalence of antibodies to HHV8's viral capsid antigen correlates with the distribution of classic KS in high incidence areas. Clustering of seroprevalence within some families suggests the presence of familial risk factors for active HHV8 infection. Okay. But what about the possibility that HHV8 is coming from pigs with African swine fever in Sardinia? Well, that seems to be a question nobody wants to ask or research. But if Europe becomes overwhelmed with African swine fever over the coming months or years, scientists may have no choice but to test pigs for HHV8 and people for African swine fever and see if the twain shall meet, so to speak. But there already is some suggestive research about where HHV8 is coming from. I found a fascinating bit of information in a research paper entitled Classic Kaposi Sarcoma in Southern Sardinia, Italy. It was published in the British Journal of Cancer on October 4, 2004. In their concluding remarks about their study, the authors write, "This is the first study of classic KS incidence in southern Sardinia. And in the northern area of Sardinia, most cases have been observed in countryside areas, suggesting a role of contact with animals and farming cereals. So could those animals by any chance be pigs? Just asking. I mean, is it crazy to ask whether animals in a country where a hemorrhagic virus is endemic are passing on something that is capable of causing the hemorrhagic sarcoma known as Kaposi sarcoma? Oh, and one other thing. I left out an important point that should be mentioned here. In laboratory studies, African swine fever virus has in the past been confused with porcine herpes viruses. Just saying. Okay, so enough about Sardinia and Kaposi sarcoma and HHV-8. Let's talk about HHV-8 and chronic fatigue syndrome. This is the cherry on the Sardinian porcine whipped cream. There is a much beloved chronic fatigue syndrome physician in New York named Susan Levine. Patients I've talked to speak highly of her, and believe me, it is a field full of dingbats and sadists, not to put too fine a point on it. But the most impressive thing about Susan Levine is not that she is a wonderful practicing physician. No, she did some research that should knock your socks off, and it should have knocked the socks off of the whole chronic fatigue syndrome community of researchers and patients. Something she published in the Journal of Chronic Fatigue Syndrome in 2001 took my breath away. It was in Volume 9, Issue 1. In her abstract, she wrote, "Because patients with chronic fatigue syndrome manifest a wide range of symptoms involving the central nervous system, as shown by abnormalities on brain MRIs, SPECT scans of the brain, and results of tilt table testing, we sought to determine the prevalence of HHV-6, HHV-8, Epstein-Barr virus, cytomegalovirus, mycoplasma species, chlamydia species, and Coxsackie virus in the spinal fluid of a group of 12 patients with CFS. Although we intended to search mainly for evidence of actively replicating HHV-6, a virus that had been associated by several researchers with this disorder, we found evidence of HHV-8, chlamydia species, CMV, and Coxsackie virus in 6 of the 12 samples. I repeat, we found evidence of HHV-8, chlamydia species, CMV, and Coxsackie virus in 6 out of 12 samples. So she found the Kaposi sarcoma virus in chronic fatigue syndrome patients. Kaposi sarcoma was the most dramatic manifestation of the early AIDS cases. Anyone who says that this doesn't cry out for research into the connection between chronic fatigue syndrome and AIDS is in denial. And anyone who doesn't recognize that the Sardinian overlap of HHV-8 and African swine fever doesn't cry out for more research into the relationship between chronic fatigue syndrome, AIDS, and pigs is also in some kind of denial. In speaking of denial, an amazing letter has been posted on Reddit. It's by a doctor with chronic fatigue syndrome who makes a dramatic plea that his colleagues start to take chronic fatigue syndrome seriously. Here's the entire post. "I was educated at Baylor and practiced medicine for 30 years. I had a thriving practice, a rich social life, and excellent physical and mental health. I loved what I did and loved my life. I ran marathons, spoke at conferences, and chaired nonprofits. I am now completely bedridden with post-viral CFS. I am writing this to beg my fellow colleagues to take this disease seriously, understand that it's 100% organic in origin, and that it can happen to anyone. I used to see CFS patients fairly often in my practice. Some of them were quite debilitated and some semi-functional. I always tried to be sympathetic and did what I could to help. But truth be told, there was always a voice in my head questioning if their symptoms were psychosomatic. At times I delayed a diagnosis because the literature told me to wait 6 months. I recommended exercise, antidepressants, and psychotherapy because that had always been the conventional wisdom. And when patients didn't come back, I subconsciously assumed they had gotten better and that I was justified in my approach. I feel tremendous guilt about this now. When I got the flu that started this, I thought I would be out of work for 10 days. 10 days turned into 10 weeks and then 10 months. The virus was gone, my labs were clean, and yet I still felt horribly ill. My symptoms. I could barely stand up in the shower due to orthostatic intolerance. Later, my wife would have to install a shower chair. I could not read or write due to cognitive dysfunction. I could not walk more than 45 steps without extreme lactic buildup in my muscles. Any minor exertion would produce an intensifying of symptoms for several days. Add on insomnia, sensitivity to noise and light, and uncharacteristic emotional lability, and you understand the hell my life became. Every type of conventional medical test came back negative or could not explain symptoms. My own family thought I was crazy, not to mention my friends, cohort, and colleagues. Of course, I tried the standard things I told my patients to do. Antidepressants were hit or miss, as they often are, and did not touch the core symptoms. Psychotherapy was helpful for coping. Exercise of any kind was a complete unmitigated disaster that severely and permanently worsened my state. Finally, I did find lab abnormalities, cytokines, Krebs cycle metabolites, near zero ADH. As I lay bedbound, I slowly regained the ability to process complex data, and I poured through the research and discovered that yes, this is a very real illness with organic abnormalities documented as early as 1932. Why aren't we taught this in medical school? I tried antivirals, antibiotics, hormone replacement, and yes, I'll admit, even some more questionable alternative medicine protocols. Nothing worked. Finally, I went into remission using a combination of monoclonal antibodies, Rituxan, Cosentyx, Enbrel. Remission was glorious. I took my wife to Costa Rica, played with my grandchildren, and learned how to sail. And then I relapsed for no good reason, and hell returned. As of yet, I have been unable to reproduce the first remission. I beg other doctors to take this to heart. CFS is a real disease, as bad as end-stage AIDS or cancer. It is also treatable, but only through trial and error, and even then, nothing is guaranteed. I think that amazing open letter should be sent to every doctor in America, especially the ones at the Centers for Disease Control and the National Institutes of Health. Hopefully more doctors with chronic fatigue syndrome will come out of the closet. After all, they have a contagious illness which they can spread to their families and patients. And hopefully they will lobby for honest research that is not afraid to ask about the connection between chronic fatigue syndrome and AIDS and what I call the 50 shades of AIDS viruses, the cockamamie and very destructive HHV6, HHV7, and the one we talked about today, HHV8, or the so-called Kaposi sarcoma virus. Somebody should do a public service announcement with 10 doctors and nurses who have chronic fatigue syndrome, warning the public that CFS is an illness doctors and nurses can contract from patients and patients can contract from doctors and nurses. That should get people's attention. It is amazing how many people talk about the chronic fatigue syndrome crisis without mentioning the work of Nina Ostrom and Hillary Johnson. Nina Ostrom reported on chronic fatigue syndrome in my newspaper, New York Native, from 1988 to 1997, before many of the people speaking out now even had this illness. I never hear anyone discussing her reporting or the three books written by her, which I published on the subject. And it is also shocking that many people ignore Hillary Johnson's epic history of the CDC's chronic fatigue syndrome cover-up. Her book, Osler's Web, makes it clear that a decision was made at the CDC not to tell the public the truth about chronic fatigue syndrome. Nina Ostrom's three books, What Really Killed Gilda Radner, 50 Things You Should Know About the Chronic Fatigue Syndrome Epidemic, and America's Biggest Cover-Up are all available on Amazon, as is Hillary Johnson's Osler's Web. And speaking of Hillary Johnson, I urge you to go to her website and become a subscriber to her up-to-the-minute reporting on chronic fatigue syndrome. That is at oslersweb.com. If you want to know more about the possibility of a relationship between African swine fever virus and the 50 shades of AIDS viruses, you can find more information on my websites, HHV6 University and African Swine Fever University. You can find links to them at charlesortleb.com. That's Charles, ortleb.com. By the way, I've written a satirical novel about the politics and science of all this. It's called Pig, a Memoir. I like to think of it as the 21st century spiritual sequel to George Orwell's Animal Farm. In Pig, a Memoir, the pigs talk and the humans oink. Pig, a Memoir turns the world of public health upside down. The pigs are more afraid of getting illnesses from humans than the humans are afraid of getting illnesses from pigs. You can find Pig, a Memoir on Amazon in every country, in print and Kindle versions. You can find more information about Pig, a Memoir and all my books about the relationship between chronic fatigue syndrome and AIDS at charlesortleb.com. You can also find all the songs I've written with Chris Davidson there. I thought I'd close with one that is about how language is used to disguise reality and to try and control what other people do and think. In many ways, the cover-up of the relationship between chronic fatigue syndrome, AIDS, and the 50 shades of AIDS viruses is a big, nefarious word game. The title of the song is Language is War. It's available on iTunes, Spotify, and all the streaming services. Come on and say it now.
WTF, OMG, WTF, OMG. Come on and say it now. What has happened to our humanity? We can't even agree to disagree. No one shares beers or tears anymore. It's too much trouble to leave our bubble. Of either or, nail this manifesto to your existential door. Words are weapons, and language is war. Come on and say it now. WTF, OMG, WTF, OMG, WTF, OMG, WTF. OMG, OMG. The thought police rule the day, telling us what we can and cannot say. What happened to conversation and discussion? You open your mouth and the trolls rush in. Words are weapons and language is war. WTF, OMG, WTF, OMG, WTF, OMG, WTF, OMG. What has happened to our humanity? We can't even agree to disagree. No one shares beers or tears anymore. It's too much trouble to leave our bubble. Door. Words are weapons, and language is war. Come on and say it now. WTF, OMG, WTF, OMG, WTF, OMG, WTF, OMG. There's no safe space for the meeting of minds. It's I, me, me on the battle lines. Freedom has one foot in an early grave. Just be yourself, you must be brave. Someone is watching what you say and do, and they know what you're thinking too. Words are weapons, and language is war. WTF, OMG, WTF, OMG, WTF, OMG, WTF, OMG. Words are weapons, and language is war.